From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Well, on behalf of Art Bell and myself, we hit the trifecta in a big way. Number one in New York on WABC, number one in Los Angeles on KFI, and number one in Chicago on WLS. Thank you for making that happen. I'll have more ratings news in a week. Later on this hour, I have a statement to read sent to me from past guest Jordan Maxwell. Jordan is under attack, but I want to read that email to you. And next hour, world-renowned best-selling author Neil Donald Walsh with a controversial look into mankind's greatest question. Here's some of the news of the day. A report of suspicious material on a United Airlines flight from New York to San Francisco prompted the pilot to make an emergency landing at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago. The material turned out to be wires, an MP3 player, and some medicine, according to the Transportation Security Administration. A United spokesperson and Chicago police would not say if anyone was fully taken into custody as the Chicago bomb squad and arson squad investigated the materials. A passenger aboard the flight had told the flight attendant that he saw another passenger with suspicious material. He said the flight attendant and crew examined the material and recommended landing. All 66 passengers and 8 crew members aboard United Flight 27 were evacuated after the airplane landed. The United States' count of major world terrorist attacks more than tripled in 2004, a rise that may revive debate on whether the Bush administration is winning the war on terrorism. Congressional aides say that the number of significant international terrorist attacks rose to about 650 last year from about 175 in 2003, according to congressional aides briefed on the numbers by State Department and intelligence officials. The aides were told that the surge partly reflected an increased tally of violence in India and Pakistan related to the Himalayan region of Kashmir. Both countries claim that region. Afghan farmers in Afghanistan have begun harvesting this year's opium crop, exposing limits of a U.S.-sponsored crackdown on the world's largest narcotics industry, despite claims by the president of Afghanistan that the drug cultivation was down sharply. The harvest news came a day after the arrest here in the United States of an Afghan accused of being one of the world's biggest heroin traffickers, of close ties to the ousted Taliban regime. On Tuesday morning, farmers could be seen gathering things from their opium poppies near the main road through the southern province of Kandahar, a key growing region targeted by American-trained teams that are trying to eradicate that. Production of opium, the raw material for heroin, has bloomed and really exploded since the fall of the Taliban in 2001. Last year, cultivation reached a record 323,000 acres, yielding nearly 80% of the world supply and keeping up part of that Afghan economy. As we reported yesterday from WorldNetDaily.com, Iran is not only covertly developing nuclear weapons, it's already testing ballistic missiles specifically designed to destroy America's technical infrastructure, effectively neutralizing the world's lone superpower. Now, this according to top U.S. intelligence sources, top scientists, and Western missile industry experts. The radical Shiite regime has conducted successful tests to determine if its Shahab 3 ballistic missiles, capable of carrying a nuclear warhead, can be detonated by a remote control device while still high in the altitude. So why do they want to do this? Because if this happens, it would create an electromagnetic pulse that could effectively knock out America's critical electrical and technical infrastructure, effectively sending us back to the 19th century with a recovery time of months or years. In a moment, the founder, editor, and chief executive officer of WorldNet Daily, Joseph Farah, our guest, will talk about this incredible story on Coast to Coast AM. Joseph Joseph Ferres, the founder, editor, chief executive officer of WorldNetDaily.com, the world's leading independent news site. In addition, he hosts a nationally syndicated talk show. He has written for such publications as the Wall Street Journal, Jerusalem Post, Los Angeles Times, Boston Globe, San Francisco Chronicle, Chicago Sun-Times, and a host of other publications. Joseph Ferres made a name for himself with traditional daily newspapers prior to his founding of WorldNetDaily, running the Sacramento Union and directing the news operation of the Los Angeles Herald Examiner for 6 years. He speaks all over the world on topics ranging from the Middle East to the media to domestic policy issues. He's been on Coast to Coast before and will again be in the future, but this time we brought Joseph in to talk about his incredible story about the Iranian plans to knock out the United States with one nuclear bomb. Joseph, this story is frightening to me because we've always thought, you know, what's going to happen when they try to get missiles to hit us on land? In this particular case, all you need is a ship close by and the ability to launch a missile, and then you detonate it in the atmosphere. That's pretty dangerous. How did you come about this story?
Well, it's an interesting story. About 10 days ago, I got some intelligence information, and which was later confirmed by official sources, that Iran has been doing missile tests with its Shahab missiles over the Caspian Sea. And the strange thing about these missile tests is that they were practicing detonating at high altitudes. And, you know, I was scratching my head, George, when I found out about this, because immediately I'm thinking electromagnetic pulse.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't thinking of the target. I was thinking of Iran's biggest enemy being Israel, and EMP is kind of a lousy tactic for Israel, because you'd be wiping out the electronics in most of the Middle East and a lot of countries that are friendly to Iran. And then I happened to stumble into a private briefing a few days ago with Dr. William Graham, who is President Reagan's former science advisor, who is one of the foremost experts on electromagnetic pulse. And he was giving a briefing on this topic and the threat that it poses to the United States, and it's starting to come together for me. All of a sudden, he mentions that Iran has been studying this technology and that they had reason to believe, he just finished putting together a report to Congress, that Iran has been considering this as a kind of a preemptive attack against the U.S. in the event that, you know, the U.S. gets serious about knocking out its nuclear facilities. And I almost fell off my chair.
Well, you might remember, too, a couple summers ago, we had this incredible power outage throughout the Midwest and up towards part of the East in Canada. Nobody really has satisfied my hunger for the answer to this, Joseph.
You're exactly right. I remember it. You probably remember it as well, that within an hour or two, the lights were still out in New York, and the FBI was telling us it was not terrorism-related. And I'm always, you know, I'm always fascinated with that. How do you know it's not something until you know what it is?
Exactly.
We have never gotten a complete explanation of what happened with that incident.
What are the possibilities that Iran may have tested somehow? Now, they say they didn't have any nuclear capabilities at that time, but what if somebody was able to help them, or it was a test? Let's see what we can do. Let's see how we can knock out power. I mean, and I wouldn't pass, you know, we test ourselves. We've done that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put it past us just to learn something to see if we would do that over our own country, just to see what would happen in a smaller region.
Right. I don't have any, you know, information about that, but the thought crossed my mind as I was preparing this article, and it's certainly one of the questions I'm going to continue to be asking. I've got the interview scheduled tomorrow with Dr. Lowell Wood, who is the new chairman of the Commission to Assess the Threat to the United States from Electromagnetic Pulse. And, you know, I want to hear a lot more detail about this story.
It is a frightening story in that this is all possible. Now, we've been working on electromagnetic pulses. I know we have some. We've been talking to John Alexander, for example, who is an expert in different kinds of weaponry. We're ready to go. I think we've got something now that we were going to test in Iran next year, mm-hmm. that they just flip a switch and it's for crowd control. And you just bring people down to their knees, Joseph.
Right. Right.
In this particular case, as you reported in your column in WorldNet Daily, the Iranians or whoever might possess this kind of capability, they don't have to launch from their country, do they?
No, they can use a ship outside of, you know, in international waters. It's not a big deal. The kind of missile that is it requires to get a nuclear warhead to sufficient altitude, this can be accomplished with a Scud missile, George. A Scud missile, you can buy them on the black market right now for $100,000. So we're not talking about, you know, I mean, this is within the capability of Al-Qaeda if Al-Qaeda can secure a nuclear device. And, of course, you know, we got many reports that they did that some time ago. So Iran is just one of the suspects, one of the threats. The threat is also certainly posed by North Korea, which we know has nuclear. You know, I mean, they're bragging about their nuclear weapons and their missile technology is superior to anything Iran has. So the threat, you know, we remember, those of us who are old enough remember that back in the Cold War days, EMP was something we were worried about because of the Soviet Union. And today the threat is coming from rogue regimes and even, you know, freelancing terrorists out there.
We're caught, Joseph, in a catch-22, and let me explain that for a moment. On one hand, one might say, come on now, let's slow down, let's catch our breath. There aren't countries out there that want to do anything to us because they know what our firepower is. Let's not do anything crazy here. Then on the other hand, you do have the possibility that some of these rogue nations or terrorist groups could find capabilities and could exploit them. And it's a catch-22. And I don't know, and I'm glad I'm not a president, because I don't know what direction you go in. Do you annihilate these people when they haven't done anything really yet, just on the fear factor that they could? Or do you sit back and wait and then take a chance that they could hit you and then you're really up the creek? What do you do?
I've received a lot of emails since the story came out from people saying, oh, don't be ridiculous. This won't happen because Iran knows we would devastate them with a nuclear attack. I don't know that at all, because with an attack like this, there could be sufficient plausible deniability. You wouldn't even know who launched the attack. It could be any one of a number of suspects, some of whom we've already mentioned in this conversation. So are we going to just respond against Iran because of an attack like this when we're not certain who was directing it?
And this kind of a device, just so people would know, will not kill people immediately. Mm-hmm. The problem is that if it knocks out electrical and other technological infrastructure, what happens is your refrigeration goes, your food goes, your water goes. You need those pumps to keep water going to your houses. In all kinds of systems that we have grown to appreciate, they're gone. That's how people can start to die.
Yeah, it's remember the Y2K fears. It could come about from an attack like this. We could actually realize all those devastating consequences that we so feared before Y2K in an EMP attack.
Have we become too technical? We've relied so much now on this technological age, Joseph, that we're doomed if something like this happens?
Well, as the experts say, like William Graham said the other day, you know, our greatest asset has become our greatest vulnerability. But, you know, it's not such a big deal to protect our infrastructure. It may sound overwhelming. But the fix here, as long as we have a national will to do it, and as long as Congress recognizes that, and some members certainly do, and the President and Homeland Security can get behind a program, it won't take that long to protect our vital national domestic infrastructure, and it won't be that expensive. However, if we don't do it, and we do suffer the effects of a cataclysmic attack like this, you know, you're looking at somewhere between months and years of recovery time.
Some will say that WorldNet Daily leans somewhat to the right as opposed to going toward the middle, for example. Would you say that's pretty accurate? That's fair?
You know, I've been a newsman my whole life, George, 30 years. I've run daily newspapers. I really, you know, I have strong opinions myself, and I guess you wouldn't, I wouldn't, I wouldn't argue too much if you said I lean to the right. But, you know, I'm just one person. I direct a news organization, which I consider to be as professional as any news organization out there. And, you know, we try to present the news in as straightforward, unbiased manner as we possibly can.
Well, and you're not making these stories up, Joseph. They're out there. They're real. You know, these are real experts who have real concerns.
You don't last very long in this business if you make them up.
Well, that's exactly right. What do we do then as a nation? I mean, do we go ahead and start doing our own electromagnetic pulse weapons and start hitting these other countries right now, taking them out, so we don't kill anybody, but we shut down their systems for a while? What happens?
I think sometimes, you know, the best offense is a good defense. We've got extraordinarily devastating weapons, you know, more so than any other nation on the planet. I think that the smart thing to do, and I think that the thing that this commission is recommending, is that we take a good hard look at our technical infrastructure here, protect it as best we can, especially, you know, we've got these transformers that are so vital to our electrical grid. And we don't produce them in this country. So if they get fried in an attack like this, we have to wait for a foreign producer to make them one at a time and ship them over to this country. But they can be protected fairly easily. I don't know all the scientific details behind it, but it seems to me that would be the prudent course, to protect what we have now against the devastating effects of an EMP attack. And then if Iran wants to try something, you know, at least it won't mean our economy is devastated. It won't mean immense suffering in this country. The key thing is electricity. You know, that's the lifeblood of our society.
Technologically speaking, how would this work? How could someone take us out?
Well, basically, the idea is to launch a nuclear weapon on a missile, get it at a high altitude.
And it's got to be nuclear. It can't be a conventional one, right?
No, conventional really won't have the impact.
All
it
right.
doesn't have to be a large nuclear weapon, as I understand it. Position is more important. The higher the altitude and the more centered it is over the continental United
mm-hmm.
States, the greater the impact. If it's at, you know, 60 miles up, it'll have a very significant effect. The higher it goes, it works on line of sight. So, as much of the continent as that bomb, when it explodes at that altitude, as much of the continent as it can see, that's where the devastation will take place.
And it basically kills electrons, doesn't
it? That's what it does, yep. And circuit boards. And basically anything electronic that has anything remotely resembling an antenna coming out of it. I asked
Oh,
William,
that's great. My cell phone in my hand will go, right?
That's right. Even your generator, your backup generator, if it's connected to your electrical system, it will be fried.
Now, this would create some interesting scenarios, Joseph. First of all, you know, we do have our deterrent out there in the oceans called those nuclear submarines
yes.
that are all loaded with their missiles.
Yeah, they would not be affected.
They would not be affected
and
at all.
I don't believe from, you know, this is above my pay grade, but I don't believe from what I've heard from the officials that I've talked to who are knowledgeable in this area that it would affect our missile response either, even land-based missiles. Those have already been protected. We went through this drill in the 1980s with the Soviet Union, and I'm fairly certain that, you know, a missile launch would not be prevented.
But the problem is, though, as you pointed out, if, you know, Al-Qaeda, we've heard all along that Osama bin Laden, wherever he may be, and I want to hold you over for the next half hour to take questions.
Sure.
Would you do that? And I also want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Iraq and the search for bin Laden, because you've written some stories on that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if somebody gets a ship and, you know, goes a couple hundred miles offshore, off the United States, and then launches, we'll have no idea who did it.
I think the last time I was on your show, George, we talked about Al-Qaeda's armada, Al-Qaeda's navy. At that time, we were talking about 6 ships. The latest information I have is that they have up to 80 ships, any one of which would be a sufficient platform for launching the kind of missile we're talking about. So if they've got a nuclear warhead and they know how to aim one of these missiles, they could do this.
We'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls. We'll continue the discussion with the founder and editor and chief executive officer of WorldNetDaily.com. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Miss part of the show? Listen online with Streamlink. Log on to CoastToCoastAM.com. Talk with George Norrie. Call the wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, just a few more days to go. The After Dark CD is available to you right now. You get a double CD system with great bumper music, phone calls to the show, and some great ghost stories. Order online, afterdarkcd.com. There's a toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. But the quickest, best way now is just to go to the website, afterdarkcd.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest this hour, Joseph Farah from WorldNetDaily.com. You've done a good job putting that together, Joseph, over the last couple of years, by the way.
Well, thank you. It's been 8 years, believe it or not. We're coming up on our 8th anniversary. So.
How things move along, don't they? Well, it looks like there have been and there were not any weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They can't find them. They don't think they were shipped to Syria. So it's very possible that we were misled. Maybe the president was misled by some of our own intelligence. Nonetheless, it looks like we went in there and not for the right reason. How do you feel about that now, Joseph? The fact that we're so committed, we can't leave. You know, that we're stuck there, unfortunately, for a couple more years at least.
Well, I think you're going to see the majority of the U.S. troops out by next February. That's what I'm picking up from defense sources now. There's kind of a rush to get this done. The Iraqis want us out as quickly as possible. They're feeling more confident about being able to handle the security situation themselves. But let me just disagree with what you said with regard to the weapons of mass destruction. I still am convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq before the war. I have seen with my own eyes what are pretty persuasive satellite images of what appear to be weapons of mass destruction convoys leaving Iraq prior to the invasion, and those convoys were tracked into Syria. Now you say, well, I thought, you know, we just had our official report that you know, this didn't happen. What the report actually says, it hedges quite a bit. It says that there is no evidence to suggest Saddam Hussein's regime was involved in transporting weapons of mass destruction into Syria. It leaves open the possibility that it was done unofficially in some way. Also, I think, you know, people always say to me when I take this position, well, why would our government, why would President Bush, with all with his credibility on the line, suggest that, you know, this transfer of weapons didn't take place when he, you know, got up in front of the country and told us they were there? There is a problem with suggesting to the American people that weapons of mass destruction that we went after in Iraq are now in Syria. It requires a response. It requires action taken towards Syria. And I believe that's the real reason we're getting these reports, because the U.S. government is not prepared at this time to do something about those weapons of mass destruction in Syria.
Do you support any type of military action now based on some of the things you're hearing about Iran?
I think military action should always be a last resort. I think the Iranian regime is very unstable. It's not a popular regime. I think we should support the people of Iran in their quest for freedom. These are people with, you know, with some experience, recent experience, relatively speaking, with a society that was much, much freer than the mullahs permit today. And especially with the younger generation of Iranians, there's so much disenchantment in that country. And if there's anything we can do to help them, short of military action, that ought to be the first option.
Well, it's strange how things have changed, too, because now, and you are correct, most of the Iranians, the citizenry there, support the United States. I mean, they don't like their government. Years ago, when the Ayatollah Khomeini was there, it was the other way around.
Right. There was a lot of enthusiasm. They were, you know, they were thinking they're on the verge of a utopian kind of Islamic paradise, and, you know, it didn't materialize. What they got was repression, totalitarianism, and that doesn't, you know, there aren't too many societies where people welcome what they've got in Iran. And so, you know, all you have to do is, George, look at, you know, what's happened in Lebanon recently with the spontaneous kinds of uprisings that have taken place. I'm hopeful. That's where my hope is, that the Iranian people will be encouraged in a quest for freedom and to topple this Islamic regime and institute some democratic reforms there.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with Joseph Farah. Hi there.
Hi there. My name's Herb from Chicago.
Herb, welcome to the program.
Okay, first thing I'd like to say, it's an honor to get to talk to you finally.
Thank
I've been working for about 2 years.
All right.
Okay, my comment is, when I was in the military, I was a NBC defense specialist. George, you being in the Navy, you call them CBR.
Yep.
Okay, that is, I was a nuclear, biological, chemical warfare defense specialist. And one of the things we were worried about were EMPs. And just like everyone to know, the military, our equipment is hardened against EMPs. And your guest tonight is kind of, you know, oversimplifying the topic.
How so?
Well, remember one thing. There's a little thing in physics called the inverse square law. Anything that emits photons, the further it is away from the target, the weaker the signal will be. So the higher up this bomb is, the weaker the pulse will be when it hits the ground. So you do need a rather large bomb. A small tactical nuke wouldn't be that devastating.
Well, I think what you're saying, the higher up you go, the bigger the bomb must be.
Right.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I'm sure I don't have your level of scientific expertise, but that's not in contrast with anything that I've said or written. I just don't know what, you know, I haven't studied it in depth enough. I'm going on the basis of what experts like Dr. William Graham are telling me. He's the man that Congress chose to chair this commission on the effects of an EMP attack. And altitude is important, according to him, because we have a very large country. And if you're going to affect the entire country, you've got to reach a critical altitude.
I'll tell you what, ATMs would go out, right?
Very likely.
People couldn't get their cash. It could be a mess.
If it's strong enough, we're talking about every computer in the country. We're talking about your newer cars, which are electronically controlled. Those would need to be rebooted and so forth. So it would be
a good point.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to a first-time caller line. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi there. This is Ralph. I'm calling from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, Ralph.
I just wanted to say, too, that it's an honor to speak to you finally. I have a lot of respect for you, George, and also for Joseph for his work with the Sacramento Bee.
That's okay. Thank you.
What I wanted to say was I am a professional pilot, and I get to see basically our government's response to terrorism every day at the airport, and I have a real hard time believing that we haven't seen a terrorist event in this country since 9/11 solely because of the stellar abilities of our government to protect us. And I would like to ask your guest what possibly could be going on behind the scenes that has prevented a recurrence of a 9/11 scale attack on the U.S.
Well, yeah, certainly clear that we haven't had anything of that magnitude, but I'm pretty persuaded that there have been terrorist incidents in this country. I mean, we've had things like the Beltway Sniper was, in my estimation, that's terrorism. We talked about the blackout in New York. We don't know what caused that. We don't know what caused that huge refinery explosion down in Texas.
Texas City, BP refinery, yes.
You know, we've got an attitude among the government elite in this country is, you know, to protect the public from knowing, and I think it was that attitude that led in great part to our unpreparedness for September 11. I think the evidence now with the Oklahoma City bombing that it was a wider conspiracy involving.
And how about TWA 800, Joseph?
Absolutely, TWA 800. I mean, you know, there two terrorist groups actually claimed a responsibility for the plane, going down. And, there was a systematic effort underway throughout the 90s in particular to downplay any kind of incident like that because, again, it would require a response, and nobody wanted to respond. It meant a declaration of war.
How come we haven't found Osama bin Laden?
Oh, boy, that's one of my pet peeves. You know, I do a radio show 3 hours a day, and every day I mentioned that fact. I remind the American public because, you know, I'm frustrated that we're going on our 4-year anniversary in September.
Right.
Who could have imagined back in September 11, 2001, we all knew who was responsible almost immediately, and yet here we are going on 4 years later, and we don't have the man who was singularly responsible for it. We don't have him dead. We don't have him captured. Every once in a while, we still get an audio tape or a videotape. And it's very frustrating to me, and I think it needs to be very, very high on the agenda as a military priority. One of the reasons I think we don't have him is because I think he's in Pakistan, and I don't think that the U.S. government is prepared to go chase him into Pakistan because they don't want to risk the political alliance that they've established with Musharraf.
I am putting together a roundtable discussion on 9/11, which includes to date Peter Lance. You know Peter.
Yes.
Alex Jones. I don't know if you've ever talked to Alex, but
no.
I call him my aggressive bulldog, and he's got his own theories on that too. I'm trying to find people who are pro government in terms of the story, not pro government, obviously, but mm-hmm. who believe in the mere fact that it was Islamic fundamentalists, and they take exactly everything that we have heard in the mainstream media at face value, a non-conspiratorial type person. And there aren't a lot of people. I can't find them. They don't want to talk, Joseph.
Well, I'm pretty much in that category, George. I do believe that the government has withheld a lot of information. For instance, you know, people always ask me, have you seen that plane that supposedly crashed into the Pentagon? Where's the plane? And here's what I think happened with that plane. I think that plane was shot down by anti-aircraft missile batteries, which are all over the Capitol. I live in Washington, D.C. I mean, you can see them. They're all over the place, and they were all over the place then. They were a little more well-concealed at the time, but the Pentagon was protected. And I think that plane was blown up, and what crashed into the Pentagon was just a fireball. The plane had already been blown to smithereens. So, you know, I think there are a lot, and I believe that plane that was
let me tell you, though, I'm going to take that a step further, because I think what you've said is pretty dramatic, especially with really the mainstream, it's generally conservative in terms of your reporting. So and that's important, because they haven't heard it from someone like you that I would consider to be a good journalist.
Mm-hmm.
I think there would have been pieces of that plane, even if it were hit, mm-hmm. in that region. It may have been knocked out someplace else. I think what hit the Pentagon might have been some kind of a missile or something, in order to convince people that that plane hit that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no damage in front of the Pentagon at all. And there's no way, if we had knocked this plane out of the air with a missile, there's no way even the remains of that plane would have made a direct hit the way it did without showing some scattering of something. I mean, the lawn in front of the Pentagon, Joseph, wasn't even scorched.
Yeah, you're right.
It's weird.
It's puzzling, you know, and I wish we had more openness in the government. I wish the government would just tell us the truth. I wish the government would tell us the truth about what happened to that plane in Pennsylvania that crashed. I'm sure it was shot down. You know, I would be relieved, quite frankly, to find out that it was shot down. I don't know why the government withholds that kind of information. I guess I do know their instincts, when you're in government, is to withhold information.
Yeah, well, and there were some that I think knew that something was going to happen, and for their own greedy means turned their cheek, and that's another story altogether.
Yeah, the most puzzling piece of audio I've ever heard is President Bush describing how he watched the first plane crash into the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
How did he see that?
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi. I'm calling in because I was on the airline that you were talking about earlier today in the news.
You were on that United flight going from New York to San Francisco that got stopped at O'Hare?
Yes, and I was there, and I was telling your screener, I was sitting beside a gentleman, and the stewardesses basically told us nothing was going on. It was just a suspicious package, and they couldn't really speak more about it. The guy I was sitting next to me heard one of the other guys say that he's the one that discovered it, and he went and found a guy that was an electrician, too, with the stewardess, and they went back there, and he says it was a bomb. I mean, he says it was a bomb, and then I heard your guest talking about the EMTs, and I was thinking it might have been one of those, and I got to thinking about it now. You know, they were saying it wasn't a bomb, and after all this happened, some government officials came. Well, I don't know if they were government officials.
Well, that's standard, though, after that kind of situation.
Yeah, they told us not to say anything, so that's why I can't give my name, but they tried to, you know, tell us that it was nothing, and pretty much it was obvious that they were trying to keep us quiet. And
what happened to the individual, though? I'm curious. Did you see them take him away?
No one knows. So I just know that, I didn't see the electrician, if that's what you're talking about. I don't know what happened to him, because they kind of separated us into groups, small groups. I do know, though, that you know, now I just got thinking about it on the air when he was talking about the EMTs, that it would make sense that they would try to get a small EMT and maybe take a plane.
Well, I mean, but who's the one who had the MP3 player and the wires and the vials in there?
That's what they're telling everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't. It was not. Like I said, the electrician, that the guy who found the bomb, or supposed bomb.
Found the object.
The guy who found it went with the stewardess, and they found an electrician. The guy who was sitting beside me overheard it. And he knows. A lot of the people on the plane know because they were talking. But we know that it was not a box of medicine pills or whatever that they're saying.
Okay, now,
and
was this
hiding this?
Was this confiscated while you were up in the air?
No, they left it alone. They didn't touch it. The stewardesses kept everybody away from
it. Oh, so it wasn't as if... Okay, so it wasn't as if somebody was sitting on the plane and was trying to assemble something or anything like that?
No.
All right, so the question is how did it get on the plane?
I don't know. They found it in baggage, in the back, in the storage.
Oh, that's interesting. All right, Joseph, that adds a different twist to this story.
Yeah, maybe we heard it wrong. Maybe it wasn't an MP3 player. It was an EMP3 player.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what that is, and I don't know if they'll ever tell you what it was.
No, I mean, we won't. I mean, just think about all of the terrorist incidents that you and I recognize as terrorist incidents in this country, going back to Oklahoma City, TWA, Flight 800, and so forth. And, you know, I mean, I'm almost at the point where I've given up on expecting to hear the full truth from our government.
Well, Joseph, keep in touch. I know you're going to follow up on this Iranian story. And,
yeah, lots more coming.
I'd like to see if there was any tie-in with that power outage from a couple years ago. I mean, it's just strange. That is how a small nuclear device would work if it were detonated in the atmosphere, isn't it?
I think so.
Yep.
That's what I understand, and I'll be asking all the key players those questions.
Okay, we'll be in touch. Thanks, Joseph.
You bet.
That's Joseph Ferrer, WorldNetDaily.com. Now, just in a few moments, we're going to bring in our guest, Neil Donald Walsh. He's a New York Times best-selling author. A long time ago, he was despondent, sitting in his car, and that's when the conversations with God began, and changed his life forever, and he's changed a lot of other people's lives. And now he wants to talk about some other things that he believes affect mankind. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. Log on now.